Valentine half dozed in front of the field pack with the headset on. Anka snored next to him, curled up like a giant dog. Like most Quisling military equipment, the radio sitting on the table before him was ruggedly functional and almost aggressively ugly. Late at night, the Quisling operators became more social, keeping each other company in the after-midnight hours of the quiet watches. Someone had just finished instructions on how to clear a gummed condensation tube on a still. His counterpart was complaining about the quality of the replacements they'd been getting.
Shit may float, but you can't build a riverboat out of it.
Valentine twisted the dial back to a scratchier conversation about a pregnant washerwoman.
She goes to SEO, so what? She should be happy. She's safe for a couple of years now, over.
She wants housing with the NCO wives. She's already got a three-year-old. She wants me to marry her so they can move in. Over.
That's an old story. She's in it for the ration book, bro. Look, if a piece of ass pisses you off, threaten to have her tossed off station. That'll shut her up. Better yet, just do it. Sounds to me like she's...
Valentine turned the dial again.
Wanna drop a bet on the fight in Pine Bluff? Put me down for 20 coin on Jebro. He'll take Meredith like a sapper popping an old woman. Over.
Sure thing. You want any of the pre-fight action? Couple of convicts. It's a blood match. The loser goes to the slits. Over.
Valentine had heard the term slits used by rivermen on the Mississippi. It referred to the reaper's slit-pupiled eyes, or perhaps the narrow wounds their stabbing tongues left above the breastbone.
No, I haven't seen them. I'd be wasting my money. Over.
Valentine heard a horse snort and jump outside the cracked window, the way an equine startled out of sleep readies all 4 feet for flight. The sound brought him awake in a flash. Anka came awake, nostrils flared and bat-like ears up and alert.
Arms. Quietly now, arms.
The sleeping men were huddled against the walls in the warm room where they had enjoyed dinner. Valentine snatched up his pistol and worked the slide. Anka followed. How so much mass moved with such speed and stealth?
What is it, my David?
Something is spooking the horses. Watch the front of the house post.
The lieutenant, who had appeared in his trousers and boots, was pulling on a jacket.
Get the Smalls and M-Daw into the cellar, please. Stay down there with them.
Valentine waved to the wagon sentry, Jefferson, but the man's eyes searched elsewhere. Jefferson had his rifle up and ready. Two of the horses reared, and he stood to see over them. Three reapers hurtled out of the snow, black-edged mouths open, bounding on spring steel legs. Three. He and all his people would be dead inside 2 minutes.
Reapers!
Valentine brought up his pistol in a two-handed grip. As he centered the front sight on one, he noticed it was naked, but so dirt-covered that it looked clothed. A torn cloth collar was all that remained of whatever it had been wearing. At the sound of the shots, his men moved even faster. Two Marines scrambled to the window and stuck their rifles out of the loophole-sized slats in the shutters. A reaper leapt toward Jefferson, whose gun snapped impotently, and Valentine reached for his machete as he braced himself for the sight of the Texan's bloody disassembly. Perhaps he could get it in the back as it killed Jefferson, but it didn't land on the sentry. The naked avatar came down on top of a horse, on the balls of its feet like a circus rider. It reached for the animal's neck, got a good grip. Valentine almost heard the snap as the horse suddenly toppled. The reaper's snake-hinged jaw opened wide as it straddled the fallen animal to feed. The other two, robeless like the first and running naked in the snowstorm, also ignored Jefferson, chasing the horses instead. The Jamaican's rifles fired in unison when one came around the cart and into the open, but the only effect Valentine saw was a bullet striking into a mount's rump. The horse dropped sideways with a reaper on top of it. Some instinct made the wounded animal roll its heavy body across the spider's thin form and came to its feet kicking. As the reaper reached for the tail, a pair of hooves caught it across the back, sending it flying against the cart. It lurched off into the darkness, clutching its chest. The third disappeared into the snowstorm, chasing a terrified bay. Valentine turned to Anka, who stood ready with a quickwood spear point.
Stay with the others.
He threw open the door and held up his hands when Jefferson whirled and pointed the rifle at him, muzzle seemingly aimed right between his eyes. Valentine almost flew to the feeding reaper. It heard him and raised its head from the horse, the syringe-like tongue still connected to the twitching animal. Valentine dodged the raking claw. The momentum of the reaper's strike turned its shoulder, and Valentine buried his knife in its neck. forcing it face down in the snow as the tongue retracted, flinging hot liquid like a bloody sprinkler. He ground the buoy into the Reaper. It tried to shrug him off. Valentine brought up a knee, pressed on the blade. The Reaper twitched as nerve tissue parted. In 5 seconds, it was limp. A blur, Jefferson's rifle butt came down on the back of the Reaper's head so fast, Valentine felt the wind pass his nose. Jefferson raised the gun up again.
It's done.
Valentine pulled his knife from the Reaper's corpse.
Jefferson, calm down. You might try loading your weapon. It's deadlier from the other end.
Sorry, Captain. Sorry.
Valentine ignored him and listened with hard ears all around the woods. Years ago, when he'd learned the way of the wolf, a life weaver had enhanced his senses. When he concentrated on his senses, hardening them, in the slang of the wolves, he could pick up sounds others would miss. He heard branches breaking in the snow somewhere, in the direction of the Reaper who had been kicked and then run. Valentine tried to make sense of the behavior. They had attacked randomly and hit the biggest targets they could see. Evidently, they were masterless. Their Kurian had probably been killed, or had fled out of control range, and they were acting on pure instinct. The severed neck Reaper gave a twitch of an arm.
Jack! What the fuck?
Just a reflex.
Should we burn it or something?
Get inside. Don't worry about the horses for now.
The Texan backed into the house. Valentine put a new magazine in his gun and took a few more steps around the yard, still listening and smelling. Nothing. Not even the cold feeling he usually got when Reapers were around. But his ears were still ringing from the gunshots inside, and the snow was killing odors. He rapped on the door and backed into the house, still covering the quickwood.
Anything out back?
Valentine's eyes never left the trees.
Nothing, sir.
He heard a hoarse scream in the distance. The Reaper had caught up with the bay.
Post!
Sir.
I'm going out after him. 2 blasts on my whistle when I come back in. Don't let anyone shoot me.
Valentine caught Jefferson's eye and winked. The Texan shook his head in return.
Yes, sir.
Valentine tore off a peeling strip of wallpaper and wiped the resin-like Reaper blood off the buoy. He considered bringing a quickwood spear, but decided to hunt it with just pistol and blade. It would be vulnerable after a feed. After a long listen, he dashed past a tree and into the brush of the forest. He moved from tree to tree, following the tracks. Valentine dried his hand on his pant leg and took a better grip on his buoy. He sniffed the ground with his wolf's nose, picked up horse blood in the breeze now. He instinctively broke into his old loping run, broken like a horse's canter by his stiff leg, following the scent. He came upon the corpse of the bay, blood staining the snow around its neck. He turned and followed the footprints. He didn't have far to travel. After a run that verged on a climb up a steep incline, he came to the Reaper's resting spot. Water flowing down the limestone had created a crevice cave under the rocky overhang. An old cat named Everready used to say that Reapers got dopey after a feed, that with a belly full of blood, they often slept like drunkards. This one had hardly gotten out of sight of the horse before succumbing to the need for sleep. He saw its pale foot, black toenails sharp against the ash-colored skin, sticking out of a pile of leaves. He put his hand on his pistol and decided to risk a single shot. He drew and sighted on the source of the breathing. The Reaper came to its feet like a rousted drunk, crashing its skull against the overhang. It went down to its hands and knees, shaking its head. Valentine sighted on a slit pupil in a bilious yellow iris.
Anyone at the other end?
He looked into the eye. The thing looked back, animal pain and confusion in its eyes. It scuttled to the side, shrinking away from him. Valentine tracked the pupil with his gun.
What are you doing out here?
It exploded out of the overhang. Valentine fired, catching it in the chest. The bullet's impact rolled it back into the cave, but it came out again in its inhuman, crabwise crawl, trying to escape up the hill. It moved fast as a wide-awake Reaper, despite its recent feeding. Valentine shot again, again, again. Black flowers blossomed on the thing's skin at each slug's impact. It fled beneath a deadfall, slithering like a snake, trying to avoid the hurtful bullets. Valentine leapt over the trunk after it, buoy ready. He pinned it, driving the knee of his good leg into the small of its back, wishing he hadn't been so cocksure that he'd brought Quickwood to finish it. He raised the blade high and brought it down on the back of its neck, the power of the blow driving it into the monster's spine. He tried to pull it back out for another blow, but the black blood had already sealed the blade into the wound. It continued to crawl, only half of its body now working. Valentine stood up and drove his booted heel onto the blade. If he couldn't pull it out, he could get it in farther. He stomped again, almost dancing on the back of the blade. The Reaper ceased its crawl, but the head still thrashed. Valentine put a new magazine in his gun. It was beyond being a threat to anything but an earthworm or a beetle now, but he wouldn't let it suffer. He brought the muzzle to the ear hole, angling it so the bullet wouldn't bounce off the bony baffle just behind the ear. He didn't want to risk the jaws without a couple of men with crowbars to pry the mouth open and a pliers to rip the stabbing tongue out. He heard a sliding footfall behind and turned, the foresight of the pistol leading the way. It was the other Reaper, blood covering its face, but cruel interest in its eyes. It squatted to spring. It had possessed instinct enough to approach from downwind. Valentine emptied the magazine into it, knocking it over backward. Then he ran, downhill, fast. It followed, faster. Valentine listened to it gain on him in three awful seconds, its footsteps beating a snare drum tattoo. The footfall stopped. It passed overhead, a dervish of raking claws and kicking legs. As he rolled back to his feet, he saw it fly face first into a thick boled tree. Valentine had never felt less like laughing in his life. He continued his run downhill, blowing the whistle for his life as the Reaper picked itself up. He saw the house and post with the Marines at the window. Jefferson, terror written on his face, pointed his rifle right at him. Valentine dived face first into the snow, sliding the last few feet down the hill. Jefferson fired, not at him, but over. More shots rang out, bright muzzle flashes reflecting off the dusting of Christmas snow like photo flashes. The Reaper behind him went over backward. Valentine rolled over, pistol aimed in a shaking hand. Someone must have got in with a luck shot, for it lay thrashing, trying to rise, failing.
Hold your fire. Post, give me your spear.
I'll do it, sir.
Jefferson opened the bolt on his rifle and set it down carefully. He reached behind the door and came out with a pick.
This is how we finish them in the Rangers.
Careful now, Jefferson. It might be playing possum.
Jefferson approached it, pick raised high. Valentine stood aside with his Quickwood stake. Jefferson needed this after his fright earlier.
Okay, Dickless. Time to see what happens when you steal a Texan's horses.
Damn, that fella right. That bomba doesn't have one.
Bowden spoke over the sights on his rifle. The Reaper brought up a limb to ward off the blow, but the pick went home through its face and into the ground beneath. It stiffened into immobility. Valentine turned to the Marines at the windows.
Thank you, Post. Good shooting, men. 6 shots, 4 hits. That's outstanding for a running Reaper.
Valentine hoped the lighthearted tone didn't sound forced.
On Jamaica, bullets are rare, sir.
He turned to look at the private.
In the Ozarks, men who can shoot like you are even rarer.
Magazine Mountain, Arkansas, January of the 49th year of the Kurian Order. A Southern Command Station post once stood here. Huts and wooden cabins placed to take advantage of folds in the ground and the canopy of trees for concealment and defensibility. Servicemen walking about on their duties added life and color to the camouflaged buildings. The guards, the common soldiers in their neat charcoal gray uniforms and regimental kepis, would march past files of scarecrow lean wolves in fringed buckskins. The wolves, rifles cradled in tanned fingers, assorted pistols and knives shoved in belts and boots, and no two hats alike, struck one as sloppy looking when compared to the disciplined guards. A cat might be sleeping beneath an oak, head pillowed on rolled coat and Reaper-killing sword, exhausted after 2 months spying in the Kurian zone, but still coming to full wakefulness at a gentle tap. Everyone from cur dog to colonel of the guards would make room when teams of bears entered the post. Southern Command's shock troops, wearing uniforms of patched-together grog hide and bullet-ablative reaper cloak, the latter's black teeth hanging from neck or ear, were people one instinctively avoided. Perhaps it was the forbidding war paint, or the scalps of grogs and even quislings dangling from belt and rifle sheath, or the thousand-yard stare. But whatever the source, the bears had an aura about them demanding a wide berth. Then there were the others in camp, the logistics commandos, scroungers who went into the Kurian zone to steal or trade for what Southern Command couldn't make for itself, driving their wagons to the commissary yards and yelling at women to get their children out of their mule team's path. There were always civilians in camp, families of the soldiery or refugees waiting on transportation to other parts of the freehold. There would be pack traders and mail riders, gunsmiths, charcoal sellers with black hands, hunters trading in game for more bullets, and farmers selling vegetables for government buckchits. It was chaos, but chaos that somehow kept the soldiery fed and equipped, the civilians prosperous by the standards of the Free Territory, and, most importantly, the Ozarks free of the Reapers. But that was before. By that dark, wet winter of 71, the base of Magazine Mountain had only rats and raccoons standing sentry over burned huts or nosing through old field kitchens that smelled of rancid cooking oil. Bats huddled together for warmth in SCPO mailboxes, and the carts and pickup trucks rested wheelless on the ground, stripped like slaughtered cattle. Heavy equipment rendered inoperable had a large red X painted on it. The same might be done with maps depicting the Ozark Free Territory.
God damn it! Another fallen tree ahead!
Post sat atop his horse on a rise in the road. He turned and looked at Valentine for orders. One of Anka's scouting grogs squatted to rest.
We might do better off the trail.
Narcisse sat atop her perch in the quickwood wagon. Joints of horse meat hung from a frame Jefferson had added to the wagon bed. It was too cool for flies.
These road almost as bad.
Small's son, Hank, took the opportunity to put a taconite pellet in his wrist rocket, a surgical tubing sling that he used to bring down squirrels. The boy ventured into the trees while Valentine thought. David looked at Anka, who was sniffing the wintry air.
Rain soon.
The Magazine Mountain Station can't be far. Let's pull off the trail and camp.
There had been no more Reapers since leaving the house. The refugees Valentine led made agonizingly slow progress through the ridges of the Washitas, with occasional halts to hide at the sound of distant engines. They had seen no living human, though they had come across a Reaper-drained skeleton lodged in the crotch of a tree, giving Mrs. Smalls a warmer coat once it was pulled off the corpse and cleaned. A pack of stranger-shy dogs tailed them, exploring the surroundings of the campfire and digging up the camp's sanitary holes in search of choice snacks. Valentine had tried to tempt them closer with fresher food than something that had already passed through the human digestive system, but the dogs would have none of it. Every now and then he saw a wary, furry face appear on the road behind, proving that they were still being tailed. Valentine wanted the dogs with them. Dogs hated Reapers, or feared them, and usually whined or bayed an alarm if one was near. Valentine waved Anka and Post over.
Sir?
Valentine looked up at the flat-topped loom of Magazine Mountain.
Post, we're near one of the big camps of Southern Command. I'm going to take Anka and see what, if anything, is left. Pull off out of sight of the road. Cover your tracks and camp. We'll go on foot. Give the horses a rest.
Chances are that fort's in Kurian hands.
I know. That's why I'm bringing Anka. Having a grog along might confuse them long enough for me to talk my way loose or get the jump on a patrol.
How long do you figure on being gone?
Less than a day. If 24 hours go by and you don't hear from us, act as you will. I'd say the Boston Mountains are your best chance on the other side of the Arkansas River. If there's anything left of Southern Command, it should be there. Get the quickwood to them. Don't forget the seeds.
Post fingered the pouch around his neck, identical to Valentine's, though it didn't contain any mahjong pieces.
I'll see it through, Val.
Thank you. I'll probably be back in time for horse meat and flatbread.
He took Anka over to the supply wagon. They each threw a bag made out of old long-sleeved shirts over their shoulders. The shirt sacks contained bread. Mr. Smalls rose from where he squatted next to his wife.
Everything all right with you two?
Just a little tired, Mr. Ghost.
Mrs. Smalls' belly was prominent through the opening in the coat.
We're stopping for a day or two. Fix yourselves up under the bed of the wagon. Looks like we might get some rain.
Hank's been picking up some sharp quartz crystals. There's lots of them in these hills. If we attach them to the front of those wooden spear points, it might serve you a little better.
He reached into his shoulder bag and pulled out a spear point. Valentine looked at it. The boy had set a piece of quartz into the front, carving the wood into four prongs like a gem holder on a ring. Valentine tested the point on the quartz. It was sharp enough.
How'd he fix the quartz in so tight?
He soaked the wood after he carved it. When it dried, it shrank down on the crystal.
Good thinking.
Valentine handed it to Anka for his opinion. The Golden Ones were accomplished craftsmen in their own right. Anka fingered the point.
This is fine work.
Have him make some more if he can.
Smalls nodded, and Valentine led Anka off. They watched the Smalls boy search the tree limbs, but the squirrels were making themselves scarce.
Smart kid. In the wolves, we used to take boys on patrols, called them aspirants. That spear point alone would have gotten him a place with my company.
He thinks quickly. Remember what he did with the wagon?
We could use another sharp set of eyes. Want to bring him along?
He'd have a better chance at a squirrel with us.
Anka's long ears twisted this way and that.
Settled. Hey, Hank! Come over here!
Yes, Mr. Ghost?
We're going out on an all-night scout. You want to come?
Yes, sir!
Go on. Ask your parents. It's okay with them. Catch up to us.
Thanks, Mr. Ghost!
The boy ran off toward the wagon. Valentine and Anka moved off into the woods. After 100 yards, Valentine touched Anka's shoulder.
Time for his first lesson. Keep going.
Valentine held his sheathed knife in his hand and waited next to the trail. Anka disappeared into the brush, leaving a grog-wide trail. Soon he heard the boy's footsteps as Hank ran to catch up with Anka's furry back. As Hank passed, Valentine stepped out from behind the tree. Quick as a reaper, he got the slim youth in the fold of his left arm and put the sheathed knife to the boy's throat.
Just me, Hank.
Valentine released him.
Don't pass so close to trees big enough to hide somebody.
You didn't have to grab me.
Your heart beating hard?
Yeah, I don't like being grabbed.
Then move a little more carefully when you're going through the woods. Long time ago, over on the other side of Arkansas, some friends and I weren't. They're both dead. The hood stepped right out from behind the tree and grabbed Gil. As easily as you pick up a rabbit knocked out with your slingshot.
Hood? That's another word for a reaper, right? We were supposed to call them visors.
You know how it all works, Hank?
Well, I know the reapers drink blood.
A reaper's like a puppet. There's another person pulling the strings. We call them Kurians because they're from another world, a planet called Kur. They use the reapers to feed because it's less dangerous for them when they get the energy. The donor puts up a fight.
That energy they get, it's something in us, right? Like our souls?
Valentine felt as if the boy had kicked him in the stomach. He thought back to the graves of his parents, brother, and sister who fell in Minnesota when he was 11. He had asked Father Max if their souls had been eaten.
There's some kind of mental link between the Kurian master and his reapers. The reaper feeds itself off the blood, but its lord gets the energy we call vital aura.
We walked past a reaper once on an honor guard march. They had us out burning down houses. He didn't move. Just looked at us dead cold. Reminded me of a snake sitting on a rock.
Dead cold, all right.
So that's why everyone's scared all the time now. They're afraid the reapers will get them.
That's why people cooperate with them. The people who serve them get badges or cards or pieces of jewelry that mean the reapers can't touch them.
Yeah, we heard some of that in Honor Guard. Our top guardian had some sort of certificate that signified his family was too important to reassign. I hated him. Dallas trash if ever there was.
You grew up here in the Ozarks, right?
Yes, in the borders. My pa would go out to Texas and steal or trade for horses. He sort of worked for Southern Command. At least they gave him stuff when he brought horses in.
You remember what the free territory used to be like, right?
Yes. It all happened last spring or last summer, really. I heard a lot of fighting. Then there were new people in charge. My pa was in Texas at the time. When he got back, he said we had to do what they say for a while.
You liked it better before they came, right?
Yes, Mama was happier. She hated it when Pa was in Texas, though.
I was gone for a couple years myself. Now that I'm back, I'm trying to find if there's any free territory left.
Are we gonna live there? Is there anywhere safe now?
I hope so, Hank. If there is, we'll find it.
They were refilling their water skins at a trickle when Anka came back from his scout of the old camp.
Everything's burnt out, my David. Picked clean. Lots of holes in the ground. If there were buried weapons, I'd say they've been dug up.
No one there?
Tracks. I smelled urine.
You speak really well for a big stew.
Anka stood straight, towering over the boy.
We call ourselves the Golden Ones. I grew up trading with men in Omaha. I translated for my people when I was David's age.
What's old for a stoop?
Anka's ears folded flat against his head.
About 40 years older than you're gonna get if you call him a stoop again.
You can call me Anka, or Uncle, if that's too hard for you to pronounce.
Uncle? My mom would smack me if I called a Golder Ones my uncle.
Valentine decided to change the subject.
Hank, what kind of scrounger are you?
Haven't had many chances. We just burn when we go out on the honor guard sweeps.
Valentine picked up a stick and put three parallel scores in the ground. He added a fourth, under them and perpendicular to the other three.
That's a mark for a cache. You know what a cache is? It's a hiding spot. The mark would be on a tree or a rock. See if you can find one as we walk. Chances are it'll be out at the edge of the camp. We're all going to go in and have a look around.
They crossed a series of gullies and came upon the camp, folded into the base of the mountain in the broken ground there. The camp was in ruins, inhabited only by the memories in Valentine's mind. The Quonset huts were gone, the shacks and cabins burned to the ground. The smaller branches of many of the trees in camp were black-barked where the flames had caught them. Valentine saw again the old faces of his platoon, remembering the smiles of his men over mugs of beer in the canteen, and Sergeant Gator's slow, easy laugh. He was a ghost haunting a Southern Command graveyard, and in a few more years there wouldn't be anything left to mark a place where legends lived. Anka picked up a handful of dirt at one of the burned cabins and let it trickle through his hands, sniffing it.
Jellied gasoline. Bad way to die.
Valentine kept an eye on Hank, who was examining tree bark.
Is there a good death?
Among my people's warriors, we have a saying. A good death can come through battle at a place that is remembered. A better death can come through heroism, sacrificing yourself in the saving of others. The best death comes late, after seeing grandchildren born, for then you've also had a life.
There's a lot to admire in Golden One wisdom. Beats dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
What is that?
A phrase from Latin. It is a sweet and proper thing to die for one's country. And that kind of death's neither sweet nor proper. Just ugly. Necessary sometimes, but not sweet and proper.
The ally stood in silence for a moment.
It will be dark soon.
I don't want to sleep here. Let's make a camp farther up on the mountain, somewhere we can hear.
We could make it back to the wagon if we hurried.
Valentine found Hank's footsteps with hard ears.
I don't want to travel with the boy at night. I can hide my life sign, and you don't show as a human. Hank might get sensed if there are any more of those loose hoods around.
That was odd, to run across three masterless ones. Do you suppose that many Kurians died when they fought here last summer?
I hope so.
Valentine was getting tired of hoping. Ever since returning to the Ozarks, his hopes had been vanishing from his mental horizon like a series of desert mirages. Hopes that his quickwood would make a difference in the war. Hopes that he might be able to return to the Caribbean, where Malia Carrasco was carrying his child, or daughter, according to Narcisse. Hopes that they'd find some vestige of Southern Command still in these hills. But if there was still hope to be found, it wasn't at Magazine Mountain. Valentine ate his flavorless bread and tried not to think of the plentiful fruits and vegetables of the Caribbean. Anka was occupying Hank with the story of the Golden One's battle against the general in Omaha.
They would have rolled over us, but our ghost found the railroad cars filled with the men who were operating the Reaper soldiers. He blew up some, burned the others where they were parked. The Reapers didn't go wild like the ones with the horses. They just dropped in their tracks. Took the heart out of the rest of the general's men. They were used to having the Reapers at the front of the fight, In the confusion, my brothers broke their chains and rose against them. But if it weren't for David, wounded twice.
Valentine tossed a pebble at the golden one.
Don't leave out the other details. Be sure to tell him how I almost had my head shot off.
He pointed to the scar on his face.
An inch closer and the bullet would have taken the side of my face with it. Don't leave out the part where you found me in an interrogation cell with my pants full of shit and a gun to my head. An Ka was the one who killed the general, Hank. I had a pair of handcuffs on at the time.
Just wanted to know how you became friends. The grogs I've seen don't mix with men.
Grog is a word that covers a lot of territory, Hank. It's a term for the beings the Kurians brought to our world. Or maybe made. Nobody knows. But the guys at the Miskatonic have some interesting theories. Technically you, a dog, and an oyster are all animals, but your similarities pretty much end there. Same with the grogs. Some are as smart as An Ka, who's smarter than most men I know. But some aren't any brighter than a catfish. I think you're talking about the gray ones. Like the lucky pair.
You rape things with thick old hides? They're called gray ones?
In my tongue, yes.
The ones the Kurians use carry long guns, 50 calibers.
They'll take your head off at 1,000 yards with them, too, if you're fool enough to show yourself and not be moving.
A strange voice called from the darkness.
That's what Sergeant Samuels used to say anyway.
Valentine came to his feet, hand on his pistol. He looked up to see a shaggy man in buckskins, coonskin cap on his head, and a sheathed rifle cradled in his arms. Valentine noticed his hand was inside the sheath, though, gripping it so he could get at the trigger easily. Nearly half of the man's face was covered with a stiff leather patch, but the remaining eye was familiar.
Finner? Jess Finner?
Valentine suddenly felt like a sore-footed recruit again. He almost came to attention with chest thrown out. Finner's eye took in the whole campsite, not resting on any one spot for more than a fraction of a second.
Yep. Was Sergeant Finner, Tango Company, up to a few months ago. Last time I saw you, Valentine, you were eating a watermelon the size of an anchor of rum in Missouri. Heard you got a commission in Zulu Company under Captain Lahab. He's still alive, I hope?
I don't know. I'm no longer a wolf. You look hungry, Jess. You want to come down and have a bite?
Maybe. If I do, know that you've got 3 rifles on each of you.
Stand down, Sergeant. I don't want an accidental shooting.
Been watching your little procession for the better part of a day. Recognize you by the hair at first. Limp's new. Saw you break off and thought it was time for a chat. I'm a bit curious about what you're doing out in the woods with a grog, Valentine. What kind of rig are you wearing? That's not a guard uniform.
It's mostly a coastal marine uniform, dyed black. The bandolier is from a snake.
Must have been some snake. Be more impressed if you had some friendly insignia, Valentine.
Well, technically, I'm a captain now, Sergeant, though you'll have to go on faith for that. I couldn't prove it any better to you than I could prove why I'm out here, with a grog. His name's An Ka, and he also outranks you. I've been out of the Free Territory for better than 2 years, sort of a logistics commando operation.
A boy?
Just a refugee. None of us are out here for fun. I'm trying to find any kind of Southern Command organization. If you can turn us over to one, I'd be obliged.
Finner took his hand out of the sheath.
No longer a wolf, huh? Ain't no such thing, Valentine. Once you've looked into the eyes of Father Wolf, you're one until the day you die.
He pushed the cap back on his head, revealing a greasy forehead.
Ah, hell. Whatever, Yard. It's good to see you again, Captain. Sir.
Finner held up his hand, palm outward, in the wolf salute.
I'm running with what's left of Southern Command here in the Washitas. If you want to meet the boys, just say so. They're only a couple of hilltops away.
I'll say so. An Ka, take Hank and find the others. Tell them to camp quietly for another day and wait for me. This should be the end of our trail. How did it happen, Jess?
Valentine and Finner were walking in the loom of Magazine Mountain. The radio antenna Valentine remembered atop the rock-faced cliffs were gone. Finner must have answered the question before to other fragments of Southern Command, searching for higher command like children looking for a missing parent. The words came out in a practiced, steady beat.
Not sure. I was recruiting up in the North Woods. Wisconsin this time, same as I do every year since you met me. It was August. Hottest one I can remember in a while, even up there. We had a little temporary camp south of La Crosse where we picked up some food courtesy of the underground, and a boatman said there'd been barges full of men brought across the Mississippi. Our lieutenant thought we'd better not try for the free territory until we knew which path was safe. He sent out scouts. Only one came back, and he said the riverbank south of St. Louis was crawling with grogs. Captain Dorn finally showed up, and he left it up to us. We could scatter up north or try to get through the Ozarks. Most tried, a few recruits even. Well, they were right. The hills were crawling. We got picked up by some of those flying shit-eaters, and the harpies put the big ones on us. Legworms barreling through the brush like tanks, with grogs picking us off right and left as we ran. It was a massacre, no other word for it. I made it out running south. Came across a week-old battlefield on the Crowley Ridge. Our men were hanging in trees everywhere, getting picked at by crows. Around there, I think I got some bad water. Picked up a bug. Woke up in a hayloft. Some farmers had found me wandering. Said I had a fever. Babbled. I was about 20 pounds thinner. This family said the Currians were running the show now, but they'd heard there was still fighting in the Washitas down by Hot Springs. Let's take a break.
Finner sat down and Valentine joined him, rubbing his tired left leg. Finner passed him a little stainless steel flask. Valentine smelled the contents and shook his head, handing it back.
So, I'd lost my blade and my gun while I was sick. When I felt well enough to move on, they gave me a bag full of food and made me promise to say I got it in another village if I got caught. I ran into three deserters trying to make their way to the mountains in Kentucky. They said it was all over for the Ozarks. We'd been hit from everywhere, including up. They flew over at the beginning, dropping wild reapers, called them sappers. I guess there were hundreds of them loose at one point.
I've seen them. They're still running these hills.
Finner wiped his brow.
Southern Command had to send out teams of wolves and bears to deal with the sappers. Not enough reserves when the real attack came, though they tell me it wouldn't have made a difference.
So, when did you reach the Washitas?
Last summer. Gotta warn you, we're an ad hoc unit. Every man's there because he wants to be there. No parades or drill or courts-martial. Not enough supply to do anything but keep us alive. The fighting we do is purely to keep from getting captured. I wouldn't throw that captain title around. The general wouldn't like it, unless he puts you on his staff.
General who?
Valentine disliked it when someone was known only by the title General. It reminded him of the leader of the Twisted Cross.
Martinez, 12th Guards formerly.
Don't know him.
Valentine felt the darkness coming on. The air took on a wet chill.
Well, he wasn't a general before. He was colonel of the 12th.
They had the Tiger Stripe Kepis. Orange and black, usually stationed in the Arkansas Gap.
Yep. Got the hell knocked out of them by troops coming in from Texas. That's who's running the Fort Scott area and the Washitas. Texans and Oklahomans. They must have stripped the Dallas Corridor bare. They say the invasion was over 100,000 men.
How are they feeding them? Aren't guerrillas hitting the supply lines? When I was in Zulu, that was supposed to be our catastrophe assignment.
I can't say. I spend my time scavenging, not on ops or recon. I've seen low draft barges coming up the Arkansas, cattle and rice.
I came through northeast Texas. I thought the patrols looked slim.
Yeah, the K's in Texas think big. They're supposed to get a chunk of the Washitas, but there's some new big shot organizing things out of the ruins in Little Rock. That's who's really running things hereabouts now. A man, if you can believe it. Old Satan and his gang of Currians.
Satan?
Solon. Council Solon, his papers say.
Valentine's nose told him they were approaching the camp before they came across the lookouts. Latrine discipline wasn't a priority for this particular remnant of Southern Command.
So, this is what defeat smells like.
It's not that bad. You get used to it. Hush now. We're coming up on the pickets.
They were still in uniform, more or less. Mottled camouflage pants and gray winter uniform tunics, many with hunting vests thrown over them. Scarves and gloves made out of scrap cloth. Similarities ended at the extremities. There were a variety of hats, gloves, and boots. Some of the men had resorted to cobbled together shoes or sheepskin moccasins. A boy with a hunting bow whistled from atop a rock, and four men drew beads on them.
It's Fenner with the new one.
Found a stray in the hills. Wolf, I know him personally. I'll vouch to the captain.
Valentine wondered why he didn't mention Anka or Hank.
Then report to him.
They passed the pickets, who dispersed again as soon as they moved up the hillside for the camp. Valentine's nose added other camp smells to the list headed by men shitting in the woods. Smoke, tobacco, open pit cooking, and pigs. He heard a guitar playing somewhere. It drifted softly through the trees like a woman's laugh. To Valentine, it seemed forever since last fall's wagon train, where he'd enjoyed the music of the Texans under the stars.
Why didn't you mention the others?
Didn't want your grog friend hunted down. Standing orders, no alien prisoners.
He's not a prisoner, he's an ally. He's worth those four pickets and another six like him.
Yeah, well, all the more reason to keep him alive. Quislings we bury, but dead grogs get stewed down to pig feed.
They topped a flat little rise, thickly wooded like most of the Washita Mountains, overshadowed by another hill whose summit was scarred with limestone on the face toward the camp hill. Valentine saw watch posts under camouflage netting among the trees of the taller hill. Tents were everywhere, interspersed with hammocks and stacked stones to hold supplies and equipment clear of the wet ground, along with little shacks and huts put together from everything from camper tops to bass boats. Evil-smelling trash filled the bottom of every ravine. There was no signage, no evidence of any kind of unit groupings. It reminded Valentine of some of the shanty towns he'd seen in the Caribbean, minus the cheerful coloring and kids playing. The men sat in little groups of 4 to 10, trying to get in a last game of cards by firelight. Valentine passed a still every 60 paces, or so it seemed, all bubbling away and emitting sharp resinous smells, tended by men filling squared-off glass bottles.
Well, welcome home, Captain Valentine.
This wasn't home. Not nearly. It looked more like an oversized drunken snipe hunt.
If you want some companionship, just look for one of the gals' tents with a paper lantern out front. They get food, wash water, and protection as long as they're willing to, well, share the bed once in a while. Sort of a fringe benefit of this outfit.
Does this outfit ever fight a battle?
We do a lot of raiding. General has us grab the new currency they're using here. We use it to buy some of the stuff we need from smugglers.
Sounds more like banditry. You get overflown?
If the gargoyles come overhead, they only see a few fires. We don't try and knock them out of the sky. We figure they just think they're refugees up here. We're far enough from Fort Scott so as they don't care, and the folks on the east side of the mountains have enough to do just controlling the flatlands.
Many refugees?
No. Well, unless they're Southern Command, we send them elsewhere.
Where's that?
Anywhere but here. That's part of what we were doing when I came across you and the boy in the grog, keeping an eye out for runaways to warn them off. We got these higher hills around to cut the life sign. But you never know when a reaper will be trailing along behind some broke dicks to see where they're headed.
Voices rose to an excited roar from an opening in the trees, and Valentine's hand went to his pistol.
Get up, Greggins!
Sounds like a fight. Interested?
Valentine scowled and followed Finner downhill to a ring of men. Someone came running with a burning firework. In its blue-white glare, he saw 40 or 50 men in a circle, expanding and contracting around the action in the center like a sphincter. Valentine heard thudding fists, punctuated by roars from the crowd when an especially good blow was struck. He saw a few women among the men, some on top of the men's shoulders, angling for a better view. Instincts took over, even in the unknown camp. He elbowed his way through the press.
Make a hole!
He quickly realized that coastal marine slang didn't mean much in the Ozarks. The crowd surged back around him, and Valentine found himself with the back of one of the combatants sagging against him.
Oh, no fair! The guy's holding him up!
A bloody-browed guard corporal looked at Valentine over his scuffed knuckles.
Pull off, mister. Otherwise he can't go down.
Valentine turned the soldier sagging against him, saw the bruised ruin of a face, then let go his grip. The man sagged to his knees, mumbling something in Spanish.
He's 8 down! Finish him, Greggins!
The corporal stepped forward, corded muscles bulging from his rolled-up sleeves. Valentine held up a hand.
It's over, Corporal. I'd say you won.
What are you, his manager? Fight's not over until he's flat. He questioned my authority.
Valentine looked at the beaten man's uniform.
I see sergeant stripes on him, Corporal. If I were you, I'd be worried about a court-martial for striking your superior. Even if you were a private, a fist fight isn't the way we keep discipline.
Something in Valentine's voice made the man lower his fists.
Now, Help him to his feet and get him to a medic. Better have him look at you as well. That eye doesn't look good.
The corporal took a step forward. Valentine was ready for it. He brought a driving knee up into the corporal's off-balance stance. Then hammered him in the kidney with an elbow as the corporal doubled over. Valentine looked at the circled men, not quite sure what they had seen in the blur of motion.
This how you do things now? Is there a sergeant in this circus?
A man with a handlebar mustache stepped forward.
I'm a captain. 18th Guards. East Texas Heavy Weapons. Who are you?
He's logistics. Just come out of Texas, Randolph.
Don't see a uniform.
I find my duties in the Kurian Zone easier to perform if I don't wear a Southern Command uniform, Captain.
I don't care for spies.
Valentine got the feeling Randolph wanted to see if he could be provoked into another exchange of blows. He reduced life sign, the old mental technique that also did wonders for his temper.
I know him, sir. Good man. Wolf officer.
Disperse, damn you. Fight's over. Get some sleep.
He turned back to Valentine.
Is that so? We better get you to the general, Captain, so he can decide what to do with you. We shoot spies trying to penetrate the camp, you know.
The men helped the brawlers to their feet. Randolph jerked his chin and put his hand on his pistol holster. Valentine walked off in the indicated direction, and the captain drew his gun. He didn't point it at Valentine, but the muzzle could be brought to bear easily enough. Finner trailed along behind as they walked. Only Valentine had ears good enough to hear him click the safety off inside his rifle sheath.
The general keeps late hours.
They approached a vintage 20th century house. Lights burned inside, and sentries stood on the porch. Where a swing had once stood, piled sandbags and a machine gun post dominated the parked vehicles in the yard in front of the house. A lieutenant appeared at the other side of the screen door.
We got an LC just in from Texas to see the general, or so he says.
I brought him in.
Thank you, Sergeant. That'll be all.
Let him in, boys.
The lieutenant had golden, braided hair and bare arms protruding through a reaver-cloaked vest hung with pistols and hand grenades. Four red diamonds stood out on the meat of his forearm. Valentine suspected he was a bear. The lieutenant looked Valentine up and down.
I think I've seen your face. I can't place where, though.
Red River Raid, 65. You bears hit the power plant and armory while two companies of wolves raided some of the plantations. I was the junior in Zulu Company. Never got your name, though.
Nails the handle. I was in Team Able. We had a hell of a skedaddle out of Louisiana on that one, as I remember, Captain...
Ghost is what goes down on the paperwork for me.
Nail held out his hand.
Paperwork. That's rich.
They shook.
Nice to see you alive, Ghost. Zulu got caught up in a fight on the Mississippi when all this started.
We can catch up later, Lieutenant. I'm sure the General would like to hear this man's report. Colorful as the conversation is with all the Hunter code names.
He turned to Valentine.
I take it you're a, cat?
Valentine said nothing.
Lots of us have family, beg your pardon, sir. It keeps them safe.
Randolph ignored the bear and waved over an adjutant. Valentine's gaze followed the adjutant into the dining room of the house, where a long table piled with files and a sideboard covered with half-eaten trays of food and liquor bottles stood under dirty walls. Under a candelabra's light, a man in red-striped trousers sat, a coat heavy with chicken guts draped over the chair next to him. He had a massive body and a small balding head on a thin neck. The odd proportions made Valentine think of a turtle. General Martinez rose and threw on his uniform coat.
Distractions. Nothing but distractions.
The general had the most perfectly trimmed Van Dyke Valentine had ever seen, as if he made up for the lack of hair on his head with extra attention to that on his face.
Sorry to add to them, sir. I'm looking for Southern Command.
You're talking to a piece of what's left.
My name is David Valentine. Cat codename Ghost, on independent assignment. Just came out of the KZ in Texas, sir. There wouldn't be a life weaver associated with your command, would there?
They've gone to the tall timber, Cat. They're hunted even more than we are.
I got jumped just across the red coming out of Texas. I've got close to 20 mouths to feed and have no idea of what to do with them. 15 are trained soldiers, including some Grog Scout snipers. The others are refugees.
Grogs? What unit has Grogs?
Thunderbolt ad hoc rifles.
It was near enough to the truth and saved explanations.
Never heard of them. Still armed?
General Martinez wasn't curious about what he was bringing in from Texas, which was just as well. Valentine wasn't ready to trust him with his precious quickwood. While they wouldn't use it to fuel the stills, it wouldn't be used to hunt reapers either.
Yes, sir.
You said you came out of Texas?
Yes, sir.
Well, Cat, we could have used a little more warning about what was building.
I was further south. I only got to Texas.
You'd be better off back there. Seems like every gulag gun is here, stamping out the embers.
Doesn't just look like a turtle, Valentine thought. Snaps like one, too. Then he felt guilty for the thought. He'd been operating outside the military hierarchy for too long. His superior deserved his respect.
Couldn't make it, sir. Got some horses that need shoes, and my wagon could use a new team. I was hoping to draw from your commissary. Food and clothing and camp equipment would be helpful.
None of which I can spare just now. Let's have your team here. You can draw rations from the common pool for now. You'll have to lose the civilians. I've got a militia regiment I'm trying to turn into regulars. You and your veterans would be a help with them.
We'll keep heading north, sir. Can someone on your staff show me?
No, Valentine. I need every man who can shoulder a gun. We're bringing you in. That's an order. You'll be safer with us.
I'm responsible for the civilians. I gave my word.
Fine. We'll provide for them for a few days while we sort this out. I could attach them to a labor company, I suppose.
He reached up and rubbed his beard with his knuckles, stroking first one side of it, then the other, making him less of a turtle and more of a cat sizing up a cornered mouse.
Randolph, take your light platoon and bring them in. I'm sorry I can't give you more time, Valentine, but other matters demand my attention. We'll talk again tomorrow. You know what to do, Captain Randolph.
Yes, sir.
Randolph saluted and executed a neat about-face. Faced with a direct order, Valentine could do little but obey. He saluted and left with Randolph. They descended the steps and joined Finner.
I feel like I've just been shanghaied.
Finner grinned, with the schadenfreude of a fox who has lost his tail, seeing another fox lose his.
Well, no, you've just been incorporated into the Bitter Enders. What's left, they want to make sure stays till the bitter end. They've been shooting deserters.
In other words, if the enemy doesn't kill you, we will. Hate that it's come to that, but there you are. 6-bullet sentencing.
How does that look stitched on a brigade flag?
Don't question unless you've lived what we've been through. Valentine, the more I see of you, the less I like you as an officer.
Randolph's light platoon was light on experience. Valentine doubted any of the soldiers were much over 18. Beneath the dirt, the majority looked like they should still be in school. They moved over the hills with youthful energy, however, and came upon post camp before noon the next day. Finner rejoined his wolves, who appeared and disappeared in wary silence. Hank spotted the approaching column first, and when he saw Valentine, he took off his straw hat and waved it.
We've been ordered to rejoin Southern Command. These kids are here to make sure we do it.
Anka rose from a squat behind a wagon, and some of the light platoon grabbed at their rifles.
What are you doing with grogs?
Randolph's hand was on the butt of his pistol.
As I explained to General Martinez, they're on our side and they're trained. They helped us in the KZ, and I expect them to be treated with the respect due any other soldier in Southern Command.
And we speak. Have those children take more care with their rifles.
Seems suspicious. You coming out of the zone with grogs?
Imdahl rose from the campfire.
Mister...
Quiet, Imdahl. He escaped the ambush in his underwear, Captain. And the only clothes we could find that would fit him were Quisling. We don't have any dye, so I'd appreciate some or a change of uniform for him. I don't want him shot by accident on standing orders.
Imdahl sat back down and huddled under a blanket in such a way that his stitched-on name didn't show.
Let's load up, Post. Ditch the lumber. We won't need to build shelters after all, and there's no point hauling it up the hill. Let's make Mrs. Small's journey as comfortable as possible.
Yes, sir.
Valentine, Anka, and the two grogs unloaded the quickwood while Post put the Marines and the civilians in marching order. Valentine marked the spot, triangulating off of the peak of Magazine Mountain.
Something wrong, my David.
Anka threw another beam on the pile.
I don't like the way this outfit we're joining is being run. I have no business challenging a lawful superior's methods, but... hell, I've seen groups of Chicago hookers that are better organized. And come all this way to hand over the quickwood to a bunch of outlaws.
Do we have an option?
Southern Command is finished, if this is representative of what's left. I'm thinking we might be better off with your people in Omaha, or maybe mine in Minnesota. In 6 more months, this crew is going to be robbing towns and trains to feed themselves, with the meanest knife fighter calling the shots. I want to see him don the small safe. Then we'll talk about taking off.
Ankh's ears sagged.
Better do it quickly, if they break the Marines up into other units.
Randolph is coming.
Ankh's ears pivoted to the sound of footsteps.
Why's everyone got wooden spears along with their rifles?
Ankh growled an order and led the grogs back up to the wagon.
For the feral pigs in these hills. Those are boar spears.
One of your men said it was for killing reapers. That black cripple said the same thing.
Have to tell them something or they'll just run at the sight of one. They think it's got big medicine. But so far, they've just been used on pigs.
I hope you boiled the meat good. I've seen men die eating wild pig. You might want to have your men check their shit. Our doc has a great remedy for worms. Just tell him you need to be sluiced out.
Thanks for the tip. Is there contact with any other pockets of resistance?
General Martinez gets his orders through special channels. When it's time to move, we'll hear it from him. There's talk of a counteroffensive next fall, when the Kurians think the Ozarks are pacified.
Seems to me they're pacified already. How many do you lose each week?
You won't get far questioning the General Valentine. The men love him. He's Daddy and Santa Claus and Moses all in one. Have patience. The Promised Land is there.
The Promised Land is occupied. We don't have 40 years. We shouldn't be acting like we have 40 days. Inertia and illness are going to kill your general's army. The Quislings and the Kurians are just going to be buzzards feeding off the corpse.
Look, Valentine, I'm liking you less and less by the minute. You ever talk to me like that again and I'll deck you. You weren't here when it was raining reapers, or when we got blown out of Fort Scott by so many guns you'd think they'd had enough to land a shell every 6 feet. Martinez took 5,000 beat-up men who were ready to surrender and pulled us back together. Southern Command put him in charge of the Central Washitas after that. He's keeping us fed and armed without any help from a rear that plain vanished on us. So quit questioning him, or I'll turn you in as a traitor.
In the free territory that trained me, 2 officers speaking in private could criticize anyone without the word treason being thrown around. You swing on me anytime you like, as long as the men aren't watching. If you do it where they can see, I'll have you up on charges for striking a fellow officer, Captain. Write up a report if you want. I'll be happy to repeat everything I've said word for word to the general.
They returned to the wagon, both simmering. Post had Narcisse and Mrs. Smalls in the wagon, and everyone else lined up behind it. Randolph's platoon had been dispersed to form a screen. When all was ready, they hitched the team to the wagon and set off. Valentine elected to walk beside Ankh and the grogs, picking the way southeast and ready to chop a path through the growth blocking the hill road if necessary. They forded a river and rested the team after the crossing.
Why did you leave the Creekwood, David?
Valentine was inspecting a wobbling wheel on the wagon, wondering if it would make it the rest of the trip. Valentine glanced around and found himself gritting his teeth at the gesture. He was used to looking over his shoulder in the Kurian zone, but here, in the middle of titular comrades, the precaution grated.
The boys we're joining up with, they're just one rung up from the bandits on the borders between the Kurian zones and the freeholds. For all I know, this general is getting set to go Quisling. He's keeping a lot of men who might be useful elsewhere liquored up and lazy. Their camp's an estate any junior lieutenant in a militia company wouldn't allow. That doesn't stop them from all talking like they're the last hope of the Ozarks.
Mrs. Smalls rubbed her lumbar while her husband went to get her a drink from the river.
Some sergeant tried to disarm your funny-talking island men when you were with the grogs. Mr. Post put a stop to it.
I'm liking this Captain Randolph less and less.
Forest lead coming in.
Valentine saw a machine gun nest set to cover the bend in the road running up against the taller hill of the camp. They'd been set up while there were still leaves on the trees, and now looked naked against the hillside.
We're here.
Randolph spoke from the saddle of what had been Valentine's horse. The column had made good time. It was barely afternoon of the second day since setting out from the shadow of Magazine Mountain.
This isn't much of a road, but it's obliging of the others not to patrol it.
Randolph's platoon led them up the hill, the grogs and marines sweating to help the wagon up the incline.
Damn!
They got them ape men with them.
One of the idlers pointed at them with the stained stem of a pipe.
Prisoners? I thought we were getting a new company. It's not even a sergeant's platoon. Thunderbolt ad hoc rifles.
Word spread through camp and men gathered, hoping to see familiar faces. The Jamaicans, in their strange blue uniforms, excited some comment among the men with dashed hopes.
Can I speak to a supply officer? I have to feed and billet my men.
Valentine heard a buzz at the back of the assembled men. General Martinez strode through. There was something of Moses in him after all. The men parted like the Red Sea at his presence. Some removed their hats or wiped their eyeglasses clean as he passed. Gorgeous in his braided uniform coat, Van Dyke aligned like a plumb line.
Welcome back to the Free Territory, Captain Valentine. Those rifles your men have. Dallas Armory, aren't they?
Yes, sir. We took them off the post at Burn Woods. Those were the ones who ambushed us coming back across the Red.
Every man counts here. Every man is important. The Grogs are another story. They'll run back to their buddies as soon as they see them. Sergeant Rivers, shoot the Grogs.
A man with stripes sloppily inked on the arm of a long trench coat pulled up a shotgun.
Sir, no! They're my men! Let me—
Shoot, Sergeant!
A Grog fell backward, his chest planted with red buckshot holes, his legs kicking in the air. Anka ran from the back of the car, knocking aside Valentine's old Marines as he burst through them. The other Grog looked from the kicking corpse to the sergeant with the shotgun. Its confused eyes turned to Valentine. Everything slowed down. The Grog wavered like a redwood with its trunk severed, then crashed to the ground. Valentine heard his own heart, louder in his ears than the gunshots, beating in time to Anka's footfalls as the Golden One ran to his Grogs with arms outstretched. The smoking shotgun muzzle swiveled to Anka as the red shell casing spun through the air. Valentine's hand went to his belt. Valentine moved, faster than he had in his encounter with the corporal the other night.
Rivers, you shoot again and I'll kill him, then you.
Valentine stood behind the general with his .45 pressed to the back of Martinez's ear.
Valentine, have you got...
Valentine grabbed a handful of golden shoulder braid in his left hand and whipped it around the general's neck.
Everyone calm down. Everyone calm down. I don't want any more shooting. Post, don't draw that.
Valentine!
Randolph pointed his pistol at Valentine's head in turn.
Let him go right now!
Men! General Martinez is under arrest for ordering the murder of soldiers of Southern Command. Randolph, you heard me tell him that Grogs were part of Southern Command under my authority. Twice. Uniform code says no soldier of Southern Command can be executed without trial and unanimous verdict of three officers.
Valentine decided not to add that the penalty for summary execution was a bullet in the back of the head.
Southern Command is gone. There is no uniform code anymore.
Then it's law of the jungle, Martinez. You're not a general. You're just some bastard who killed two of my friends. Last words?
Valentine thumbed back the hammer on the automatic.
Shoot these bastards! Every one of them!
Guns down! Guns down! Keep order there!
Valentine looked across the heads of the crowd and saw men being pushed aside before returning his eyes to the men around him. A stocky woman elbowed her way to the front. No, not stocky. Short and powerful. She wore the cleanest uniform Valentine had seen yet in Martinez's camp. Her muscular shoulders filling the Southern Command jacket in a way that would do credit to a labor regiment veteran fresh from 6 months of earth moving. Near white blonde hair disappeared up into a fatigue hat. The captain's bars on her collar were joined by an angled crossbar forming a shortened Z. The crossbar meant she was in the hunters, perhaps staff, but part of the organization that encompassed the wolves, cats, and bears. She called to Valentine's Marines.
You two, open the bolts on those rifles. Sergeant Rivers, lay down the shotgun.
The men, even those who had never seen her before, obeyed. She looked over the situation, smelled the cordite in the air, and shook her head at the dead Grogs Anka knelt beside. She turned to Valentine.
Captain, you can put up the gun. I saw what happened from up the hill. General Martinez, it's my duty to place you under arrest for murder.
I bet you're just loving this, aren't you, Stiakowski? I wouldn't fall asleep for the next week or so if I were you. These men know their duty.
Stiakowski's pallid features showed no sign of even hearing the threat, though her face had gone so white that Valentine wondered if she was about to faint at the sight of the bodies. Valentine released Martinez, carefully brought down the gun's hammer, and offered the pistol to Stiakowski.
Keep it, Captain Valentine. You're not under arrest. Neither are you, Rivers. But don't count on keeping those stripes or the shotgun. You'll do your fighting for the next year with a shovel.
Men! Handcuff and gag this little bitch! Two-step promotion to any man!
The General's no longer in a position to give orders! He's relieved of command pending trial!
She took a moment to get her wind back. Perhaps she was ill. That might account for her pallor.
Corporal Juarez, I need you and your men to escort General Martinez to his quarters. Sergeant Calloway, have Private Rivers grab a shovel and start digging graves for the Grogs.
But Grog bodies go...
Soldiers' bodies get buried on Watch Hill. That's where they'll go, right with our men.
Martinez glared at them from between two nervous soldiers.
Good luck finding three officers to convict Stiakowski. You and this other mutineer here both arrested me. You can't serve as judge and accusing officer. After I'm acquitted, I'll try and hang you both for mutiny.
Captain Randolph, find a place for Captain Valentine's people, please.
She nodded at Valentine, then turned and followed the corporal's guard up the hill.
Post, have the men make litters for the Grogs. I'm sorry, Anka.
Anka looked up. Golden ones cried. In that, they were like humans. He held one of each of his Grog's hands in his own.
Nothing. Nothing seems to change, my David. Always expendable.
Anka, I'll try to prove you wrong someday. First, I want to see some justice done for the lucky pair.
The irony of the nickname tasted bitter, like hemlock in his mouth.